which is a presentation in our lead on the HCP and forest management plan for state lands. And we are joined as our lead presenter by Liz Dent, State Forest Division Chief.
All right, well, the slideshow is coming up. Maybe I'll just get started in the interest of time. So good afternoon, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board. For the record, my name is Liz Dent, and I serve as the State Forest Division Chief. Today, we're going to provide you with an update on the Western Oregon State Forest Habitat Conservation Plan and the work that we have begun on the Companion Forest Management Plan. Should you choose to adopt the Habitat Conservation Plan in 2023, the HCP strategies would be incorporated into the Forest Management Plan, which would then become the governing policy for managing these state forests west of the Cascades. So just a little setting there. Joining me today is quite a team, so grateful to have everybody here. Mike Wilson is our State Forest Policy Deputy Division Chief. Nick Palazzotto is our State Forest Wildlife Biologist. Cindy Kolomaychek, State Forest Project Lead for the Habitat Conservation Plan. Sarah Lathrop is our Project Lead for the Forest Management Plan. So those are our ODF folks. Also joining us today are Kim Kratz, the Assistant Regional Administrator for NOAA Fisheries, our lead agency for the NEPA process, and our consultants, Troy Ramig and Deb Bartley with ICF. And you've been familiar with Troy over the past couple of years and the work that he's been doing for us on the HCP. We're really grateful to have these guests with us today as they can assist with the NEPA update and any questions you might have on that front. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the Indigenous people as original stewards of these lands since time immemorial. We seek to honor their traditional relationships with these lands by engaging the tribes in the development of our forest management plans so that their relationships may endure. We continue to work to growing our relationships with the tribes, and we're meeting directly with tribal staff to further understand how best we can reflect and incorporate their interests in how we manage these forests. Next slide, please. The RHCP discussion will focus on the elements of the Habitat Conservation Plan that have been refined since the board unanimously voted to move the HCP forward into the NEPA process and to complete the NEPA process. That was last October. So some work's been done since then. Examples include more detail on the conservation fund, monitoring and adaptive management, as well as forest management objectives inside and outside habitat conservation areas. You'll hear we often refer to those as HCAs. Kim Kratz with NOAA Fisheries and Deb Bartley will then provide an update on the NEPA process, and we will close with the Forest Management Plan update, providing you with the scope of work, explaining our planning structure and timeline, and how we plan to engage the Board of Forestry, the public, the stakeholders, and the county commissioners, FTLAC being our primary forum to do that, and of course, who you've just heard from. I would also take this moment to let folks know that the administrative draft of the Habitat Conservation Plan, the NEPA process, and the Forest Management Plan work are all available on our ODF website. I think we will provide that towards the end of the presentation. So with that, I'll hand it over to Mike.
Thank you, Liz. Good afternoon, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board. For the record, my name is Michael Wilson, and I serve as the Acting Policy Deputy Division Chief for State Forest. As Liz mentioned, we'll be going over several updates today at a higher level. The updates to the HCP so far involve clarifying language, some removal of inconsistencies across chapters, updated information that has changed since October of 2020, more definition on the covered activities, updated acreages to reflect revised species habitat suitability modeling indices, and more detail on the management of HCAs, retention standards outside HCAs, and monitoring and adaptive management, as well as updated costs to reflect changes in the updated monitoring and adaptive management strategies. I'll begin the update on the HCP with the Conservation Fund, which is designed to support conservation projects for the covered species. The Conservation Fund will be funded at a rate of $5 per 1,000 board feet harvested. This funding comes solely from ODF's share of the revenue from timber harvest as a dedicated earmark for conservation projects. This will maintain a funding source that is commensurate with harvest, but also has the flexibility to be applied across the permit area in accordance with conservation priorities. And this will provide insulation against swings in the timber market and allow projects to be conducted at a regular pace. It is estimated that the fund will have average annual expenditures of $325,000 for aquatic projects and $250,000 for terrestrial projects, with the remainder being available to either category as needed over time. These funds will be used to pay for projects that might not otherwise be accomplished due to a lack of operational funding mechanism. For example, fish passage upgrades along haul routes associated with timber sales outside of HCAs will continue to be addressed as part of our normal project work for timber sales. Activities such as large aquatic restoration projects or decommissioning of legacy roads that are not necessarily tied to a timber sale would be eligible for conservation fund monies. Likewise, young stand management activities within HCAs designed to promote diversity of habitat would also be eligible. During the first 20 years of the HCP, a considerable amount will be spent on barred owl control measures in conjunction with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and other federal and private partners. Expenditures will be tracked and reported to ensure that funds are being spent on appropriate projects. Monitoring and adaptive management will focus on tracking progress toward the biological goals and objectives for the covered species, determining the success of conservation actions, and documenting the response of covered species to habitat enhancement activities. Consistent with reporting of these results will allow informed adaptive management and adjustments to specific activities over the permit term. Aquatic and riparian monitoring will focus on key habitat attributes for aquatic species. ODF will partner with ODFW to expand their aquatic inventory program across the permit area to track key habitat components such as in-stream wood recruitment, habitat structures such as pools and off-channel areas, stream temperature, and fine sediment and riffles. More targeted sediment monitoring will be conducted in conjunction with specific projects such as stream crossings, utilizing methods such as before-after control impact studies. Terrestrial monitoring will focus on overall trends in habitat quality and quantity over time, primarily in conjunction with forest inventory updates and harvest activities. Specific effectiveness monitoring will be conducted to document the efficacy of silvicultural activities intended to enhance habitat. Species monitoring will be used to document the overall response of species to the conservation actions for both passive and active management. Annual reporting will focus on compliance with HCP strategies, including reporting on covered activities such as the harvest of suitable habitat outside of HCAs and number of stream crossings. They will document results of species habitat surveys, as well as accounting for conservation fund expenditures. Five-year midpoint check-ins will be used to report habitat trends, as well as a summary of all annual reporting items, to allow for any corrections necessary to meet implementation goals for a specific 10-year period. Finally, a 10-year comprehensive review will be used to assess the overall implementation. This will allow a basis for setting objectives for the next implementation cycle, allow for interpretation of monitoring results, and provide the opportunity to adjust operational policies and programs to further optimize implementation of the conservation actions. Adaptive management will be used at all levels within the HCP to address policy and operational concerns. Monitoring will provide informational basis for making these adjustments based on specific triggers. While adaptive management can be applied at any point during the permit term, the most formal analysis and consideration will be during the 10-year comprehensive review. Adaptation to large-scale environmental changes, such as climate change, will be conducted in conjunction with state and federal efforts. That's a high-level overview of some of the most important changes in those respects. And now I'm going to turn it over to Nick Palazzotto, our staff wildlife biologist, to go over the actual management, to give you a summary of the management actions.
Thanks, Mike. Good afternoon, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board. For the record, my name is Nick Palazzotto, and I serve as the State Forest Wildlife Biologist. The habitat conservation areas are the primary strategy we are using to achieve the biological goals and objectives for the covered species, which, are, as a reminder, are to support the persistence of the species in the permit area by conserving, maintaining, and enhancing habitat. And this last objective, to enhance habitat, is where the management actions that I'll review today come into play. So the HCA, next slide, please. So the HCAs comprise approximately 275,000 acres or 43% of the permit area, or about 36% if we exclude the riparian conservation areas therein. And the size and proportion of HCAs varies by planning area, district, and county based on ownership and landscape context, species distribution and occurrence data, existing habitat, and other factors. At the permit area level, about a third of the acres in HCAs are in known occupied sites of the covered species or other high-quality habitat, and no timber harvest is proposed in these areas. Another third of the acres are either on marginal or poor production ground that's difficult or expensive to manage, or in inner gorges and riparian conservation areas. We're not proposing harvest in these areas either. The management activities would occur on the remaining acres, which are just under a third of the total acres in the HCAs. Next slide, please. And while passive management will play an important role in conserving and maintaining habitat, the HCP will also use active management within the HCAs to help enhance habitat and landscape function for the covered species. The driver for management activities in HCAs will be to increase the quantity and quality of habitat over the permit term. And the pace and scale of activities are designed to minimize short-term negative effects while still achieving that long-term habitat objective. And so most management activities will occur in lower quality or non-habitat stands. There'll be less activity in higher quality habitat, and no management will occur in occupied habitat. Next slide, please. Management activities in HCAs will follow ecological or principles of ecological forestry, such as emulating small-scale natural disturbances and protecting important biological legacies for wildlife habitat. Efforts would focus on areas where management can improve habitat development and long-term conditions. Thus, activities will occur primarily in younger stands and dense stands with simple structure, and with additional focus on conifer restoration in alder-dominated stands and areas with moderate to severe Swiss needlecast infestations. And variable density thinning will be the primary prescription in healthy conifer stands, but we're keeping a full suite of silvicultural tools available for density management to address a variety of stand conditions. Variable retention harvest will be used to treat stands that have limited capacity to develop into habitat over the permit term. This includes stands that are infected with Swiss needlecast and hardwood stands that have little or no conifer component. And reforestation and retention harvest units in heavily thinned areas would focus on creating complex early cereal conditions that will develop towards high quality habitat for covered species over the permit term. These areas will be planted with diverse tree species appropriate to the area at limited or at lower densities rather, and with limited site preparation. Next slide, please. And so we're proposing management activities on 75,000 acres within the habitat conservation areas. And this would occur primarily within the first 30 years of the permit term so that the habitat gains can be realized over the full 70-year term. This translates to approximately 2,500 acres per year
over those first 30 years. And we've subdivided those acres by stand types, and we're proposing to manage about 45,000 acres of healthy conifer stands, or 16% of the HCAs, an additional 15,000 acres of Swiss needlecast stands, and 15,000 acres of hardwood-dominated stands. And again, that would occur mostly within those first 30 years. Next slide. There are some additional actions outside of the HCAs to support the goals and objectives for the covered species. Leave tree strategies for snags, downed wood, and trees in harvest units outside of the HCAs are similar to current FMP standards, with emphasis on large trees and other habitat attributes important to the covered species. Standards apply to the areas outside of the riparian conservation areas in each harvest unit, and the legacy structures are then retained through harvest rotations. Thus, the leave tree strategy is also intended to ensure continued recruitment of large snags and downed wood through time. There are several species-specific actions outside the HCAs, including measures to protect known nest and den trees, provide dispersal habitat for spotted owls, and protect Oregon slender salamander habitat. And it's also worth noting that the riparian conservation areas outside of the HCAs also contribute to habitat for the covered species. So that's a very brief overview of management actions for covered species. And now I'll pass it to Cindy, who will discuss timelines.
Thank you, Nick. Good afternoon, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board. My name is Cindy Kolomachuk for the record, and I am the project manager for the Western Oregon State Forest HCP. Now, I'm going to provide you with a really brief overview of the timeline for the NOAA-NEPA process, as well as the HCP. And then Kim Kratz and Deb Bartley will provide more information on that. So I'll just turn your attention to the top line here, which describes the HCP in dark blue. And you'll notice that there's not a whole lot of movement on the HCP in 2021. And that is really because the first administrative draft HCP is the proposed action that is going to be evaluated during the NEPA process. So any significant changes to the HCP would be the result of action that happens within the NEPA process. Given that, I'm going to go ahead and focus on the NEPA process, which is in light blue here. So you'll notice also that there are three primary components to NEPA. The first is the public scoping period. That happened in March and April of this year. And that is followed by a draft environmental impact statement. The draft environmental impact statement is an analysis that compares the proposed action, which is our draft HCP, with the alternatives that were developed during the public scoping process. Once that is complete, ODF will provide a public draft and submit that to the federal services. So that's NOAA Fisheries and the Fish and Wildlife Service. We will also then submit our incidental take permit applications to both services. At that time, a 45-day open window of public comment comes through. And that's the biggest kind of public comment period for the NEPA process. The public can comment both on the EIS, the draft EIS, as well as the draft HCP. The next step, once we have addressed all of the comments and considered them, and that's a requirement through NEPA, we will then work with the services to complete the final environmental impact statement. And then the very last step here on the NEPA process is to publish the record of decision. And that record of decision is on that final EIS that's published in the Federal Register. So that's a lot that's going to happen in the next couple of years. And we will be coming back to you to provide you with updates as well as direction as needed over the next couple of years. So you'll see here, that is the kind of the final row there, and you'll see the months are kind of hard to see. So I'll just articulate that. We plan to come back to you in November of this year, March and October of 2022. And then we plan to come back to you with the final HCP as well as the FMP in early spring of 2023. Our target date there is February of 2023. And so with that, in the interest of time, I'm going to turn it to Kim Kratz with NOAA Fisheries.
So good afternoon, Chair Kelly, members of the board, and State Forester Hirsch. For the record, I am Kim Kratz. I'm the Assistant Regional Administrator for the Oregon-Washington Coastal Office of NOAA Fisheries. And I'm here today to contribute in a brief update on the status of the National Environmental Policy Act process for the Western Oregon State Forest Habitat Conservation Plan. And the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, is a structured analytical process that the federal agencies must use to make informed decisions. For the Western Oregon State Forest HCP, we're preparing an environmental impact statement, or EIS, as Cindy mentioned. NOAA Fisheries is the lead federal agency for NEPA for this HCP, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is a cooperating agency. Both of the services will use the EIS to make a decision regarding the issuance of the incidental take permits attached to the HCP. The NEPA process began on March 8th of this year, when we published a notice of intent to conduct an EIS in the Federal Register. And during that the scoping period, which was a 30-day period plus a two-week extension, comments were received via the federal website regulations.gov. And there was also a public meeting that was held on March 31st to generate comments. These comments were reviewed and considered in the developments of the alternatives to be analyzed in the EIS and to identify areas of interest that would be used to define the scope and the EIS analysis. The draft EIS, when complete, will include a summary of these scoping comments, the alternatives, and an analysis of important issues. And those issues will include those related to socioeconomics, geology and soils, and environmental justice. And we anticipate that the draft EIS will be available in winter or spring of 2022. And at that time, as Cindy mentioned, there will be a 45-day public review and comment period. And with that, I will turn the presentation over to Deb Bartley, who's the project lead for NEPA with ICF.
Thank you, Kim. Good afternoon, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board. For the record, I'm Deb Bartley with ICF, and I'm serving as the NEPA EIS project manager for the Western Oregon HCP. I have five slides here, and I'll move through them quickly, but happy to answer questions. This slide here lists out the steps in the NEPA process. So you can see early NEPA planning, scoping, as Kim mentioned, we just completed. We're currently in the alternatives development phase, after which we'll publish the draft EIS, have a public review and comment period, move to the final EIS and record of decision. Next slide. The development of the EIS alternatives and the scope of analysis are both informed by scoping comments. That's what we're hopefully nearing the end of that process, this stage of the process right now. The EIS must analyze a reasonable range of alternatives to the proposed action, in this case, the HCP. Per the Council on Environmental Quality's NEPA regulations, the alternative screening includes consideration of whether the alternative meets the federal agency's purpose and need, the goals of the applicant, and other criteria. Once we've identified the EIS alternatives, we must define them in adequate detail to allow for comparable analysis with the HCP. So we're currently determining the scope of the EIS analyses, which includes identifying significant issues, data and information sources and analysis methods. So all that is happening now. Next slide. The EIS will undergo review by the services, and once cleared for publication, will be released for public review and comment along with the draft HCP. A 45-day public review and comment period is required, during which NOAA Fisheries will host public meetings. Next slide. NOAA Fisheries will review all comments on the draft HCP and draft EIS and will determine how to respond to substantive comments. Comments can be responded to in several ways, making corrections to the documents, providing explanations for not taking further action, supplementing or modifying analyses, or modifying the HCP or EIS alternatives. The final EIS will include responses to comments on both documents and will identify NOAA Fisheries' preferred alternative. A record of decision, as noted earlier, is required for issuance of an incidental take permit. Both NOAA Fisheries and the Fish and Wildlife Service are considering permit issuance, so each agency will prepare its own record of decision. A record of decision explains what was decided and why, and it certifies that the agencies considered all relevant information in the final EIS. And with that, I turn it over to questions or whatever's next.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kim and Deb. And normally we usually kind of keep rolling through our presentation, but there was a lot to absorb there on the NEPA process. And also in order to allow Kim and Deb to be on their way, we thought we'd take a pause here and see if the board members have questions specific to the NEPA process.
A question for Nick, if that's okay with the information that he provided. So thank you. This is a lot to process, and it is it's pretty impressive. Thank you. Two things that I noticed in the proposed management activities within the HCAs, Nick. One is the conifer restoration and alder stands, or I think you mentioned hardwood stands.
Yeah. I'm
just wondering what proportion of the hardwood stands would be affected by 15,000 acres of restoration?
Yeah, so I'd have to double check the numbers again to make sure it's right, but there was between 45 and 50,000 acres of alder dominated stands, specifically on Tillamook and Astoria districts within the HCAs. That's less than half of the total alder that's on the forest up there. And that's, so we're proposing 15,000 out of, I think it's 45,000 acres.
Great. Thank you. That there are species associated with hardwoods. So I just wanted to make sure. The other thing that I didn't hear mentioned, and maybe it's in the documentation, the 1,000 pages or so, but if a fire goes through, is salvage logging allowed in the HCAs?
So in the current draft, no, it's largely prohibited with the exception of hazard tree logging for safety associated with roads and other structures.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sandra.
Hi. And thank you to the NIMS folks for the presentation on NEPA. And I just had a quick question around the socioeconomic analysis. Is that going to include both the economic costs and benefits of the different alternatives? Do you consider both of those sides in that analysis?
Sorry, turning it back on. When you say economic costs and benefits, can you, it's not a cost benefit analysis per se, but I think that it might be encompassing what you're saying. Can you maybe describe that?
Yeah. Well, so I'm thinking, you know, on the one side you're hearing, you know, there may be less timber revenue, and maybe that extends to jobs and communities and so forth. But on the other hand, you may have, you know, increased recreation and recreation associated businesses might benefit from those dollars. And so I'm just wondering if that sort of analyses will occur in the document for both sides of that coin.
I think, yes, it does consider ecosystem services as well as, and government revenue, but also income and employment levels, which I think would also would encompass the recreation question.
Thank you.
Carla, you have a question.
So on the financial analysis piece, when I read the earlier draft of the HCP, it showed $250 million of cost over the 70-year life of this program. I didn't see the annual negative impact to the Oregon Department of Forestry. I heard today 12 to 25 million annually as a negative drag on the Oregon Department of Forestry annual revenue. So I would like to understand how that's paid for, and the $5 per thousand board feet, how far does, who pays, and what is our assumption on how it's paid for? Also the economic impact on rural Oregon. I understand what you said, Chandra, but I also really understand the difference between a multiplier effect of shutting a mill down versus a recreational job coming in. So I really want to understand the economic impact to rural communities that would be impacted, you know, by this. And then, you know, being on both sides of this equation out fighting fires, it also said in this HCP, we weren't going to do any burnable fuels treatment. And yet we're sitting here with a record ever burnable fuels load in Oregon. So I'd like somebody to personally educate me. And I need some education on your assumptions here with regard to adding to just a horrific problem that Oregon already has in this area. And my last question, and I'll probably have many more as we go, but this actual count on spotted owls, I would really like Fish and Wildlife to educate me, and it doesn't, it can be offline in a, you know, not in a board setting. But when we went in and set aside or downsized, went from 42% down to 8% on harvest rates in 1982, and we still aren't seeing those numbers come back in a significant manner. I guess I want to understand, I'm not a biologist, but I just want to understand what assumptions you're making that this is actually going to work.
Great. So I think I counted four questions there, and I was jotting while you went. So if I missed something, please just let me know. So there's this whole conversation around revenue associated with timber harvest projected based under the HCP and how that plays out over time. And so you had a few questions there. Who pays for, I'm going to interpret that as implementing the HCP at a cost to the division. And the answer is the division is responsible for covering our operational costs. And that is the vast majority, 98% or more, comes from timber revenue. So that's the short answer on that. The numbers that are being referenced there in the testimony from the commissioners this afternoon, I think are coming from the comparative analysis that was done last fall. And we tried to be very clear that those that was exactly that, it was a comparative analysis and really meant to help, it was conducted to help the board make that decision of should we continue moving forward on this plan on an HCP development or not. And the notion being that the analysis that we provided was looking at what it would look like under an HCP, it being conservation and revenue being the major metrics, but we looked at some other things as well. As compared to a revised forest management plan, we had a framework for, and as well as compared to the current forest management plan. And it was really to, again, a policy level modeling. We still lacked the specifics of, for example, a forest management plan that we're just beginning to work on. So there were assumptions in there. But it was with those comparisons that the board, the comparisons demonstrated that really, as we looked out into the future over the 70-year process, it was the HCP that had the best possible outcome, recognizing that no matter what, we are going to be seeing a decline in revenue. That's exactly right. And I don't want to minimize that in terms of the importance to the agency, as well as the importance to the counties. What I will say is that we recognized and really emphasized that that was modeling that was done for that decision at that point. The big decision, I'm going to argue, is coming up in 2023. And so between now and then is where we do additional modeling. And at this point, we will have greater specificity. Nick walked through some of that today around the HCP. We'll have a draft forest management plan that we'll be working on. And we'll have what's called implementation plans. Many of you are familiar with those. They really get down to how would this be implemented on the ground. With that suite of information, the modeling that we can do, we're going to have greater certainty in the results. So this question of the amount of money that would be lost over time, we'll have a better sense of that and greater certainty of that.
Yeah, for some of you that haven't spent the day with us, we've spent most of our day on the economic viability of this agency. So you can just only imagine as we talk about $250 million programs and this kind of annual reduction, it certainly has our attention when we're not necessarily economically viable today. So that is a really big question, Liz, on how this is going to be paid for. And as we build this into, you know, as our thinking, how does it impact the viability of this very organization?
Thank you. And I, what will be really helpful as we frame up our modeling is to get a really good sense from the board of the type of information you need to make the decision in 2023. So really looking to make sure that we can get that input and also lay out the assumptions that are being made in that type of modeling. So thank you for that. And I look forward to working with you more on that. We also have some questions there about fuels management. And I'm going to actually turn to either Nick or Mike to answer that question.
Sure. With regards to fuels management, we did give that some consideration. The strategy with the HCAs themselves and how they relate to conservation really hinges on them being large enough and robust enough to accept a certain level of disturbance. The HCP speaks to that to some degree with changed circumstances, both expected or foreseen and then unforeseen as well. What we are really, our intent is to continue to use the fuels management practices and silviculture outside of the HCAs so that the spread of fire does not impact the matrix lands from that. We've had good experience with that on the Santiam State Forest, actually, in many places where the fire came through, and we've been proceeding with our normal silvicultural practices in some of our thin stands, even to create structure, you know, what some people would consider ladder fuels, right? The fire actually laid down fairly nicely. And so we have some good practical experience with that. And so that will still continue to be a management strategy in the matrix between among HCAs.
I guess that is just an area that, you know, as we lost seven communities last year and we're dealing with this burnable fuels load, and you've got the governor's recommendation over here on the burnable fuels load, I just want to better understand how we are not going to add to that. In a more conclusive part of this report.
Thank you.
If I could just respond.
Brenda, go ahead.
Brenda McComb for the record. If I could just respond to that, Carla, I think it's important to not throw everything into the same bucket. You know, the Astoria district has a historical fire return interval, which is very, very long. Whereas the west side of the Cascades is going to have a much shorter fire return interval. So I think it's important to think about, if we're thinking about fuel reductions, two things. One is, what's the need, given where we are? And the other is, what's the role that hardwoods can play in that? And that's one reason why I was going back to that, Nick. So I think there's some nuanced answers that need to come to play here.
Great, thank you.
And
other board questions?
Wanted to know, Carla, if you wanted some answers about the owl question that you had, or you just set something to follow up later? Okay. All right. Just wanted to check.
I have a question. You know, we're going to be working this fall on our carbon plan, and in there, there's going to be some language along the lines of our state forests being in a leadership position by the how we are managing our state forests in terms of carbon. So can you, I'm sure you've talked about this. Can you speak to that issue? Given the plan as it's evolving, will we be in a leadership position when it comes to carbon and climate smart forestry in general? Once we have this HCP.
We definitely see that as a role for managing these public lands is to be a model for managing for multiple benefits and the importance of carbon sequestration and carbon storage in forests. So definitely committed to that. And the way we are really wanting to and envisioning framing it up is that it is throughout the management plans rather than just sort of separate, sort of like a separate chapter on carbon, recognizing that sort of detailed information will be there. But you use the term climate smart forestry, and that's definitely a big part of what we can incorporate. We have to this point in time talked about our approach as one of mitigation and adaptation as well. But that also is part of the sort of characterization of climate smart forestry. So that's one thing I'd say, and I see Mike's chomping at the bit here. The other, and then I'll turn over to you. The second piece I would say is we are, and we're hoping to talk about it a little bit today, developing the companion forest management plan. And it is those, so we've talked a lot to this point around the habitat conservation areas. There's some carbon benefits there. Also, we'll be thinking about that in terms of how we manage those lands outside of HCAs. And there's a number of different analyses we can do on that. And we're working closely with Danny Norlander and John Tkarsik on the work that they're doing with the climate report. They've actually written some portions of various pieces that we've done on management plans to date. Mike, did you want to add something?
No, I was just thinking that might be a good segue into the next part of it. But if there are no more questions, of course.
Did that get to it, Jim?
Yeah, that was fine. I have one other question, which is regarding what, you know, the Forest Trustland County is referring to as their alternative HCP. But, you know, I understand that they've turned in and so it's into the NEPA process. How likely is that, do you think, to have any of that incorporated? And how likely is what they're doing taking this process completely off the rails?
I think for the first question, I would turn it over to either Kim or Deb to talk about how a proposal that comes in from the public is used in building their alternatives. So Kim or Deb, which one of you would like to answer that?
I'm happy to respond to that. This is Deb Bartley. I want to make it short. I'm happy to elaborate. I don't want to waste, you know, your time with a lot of jargon, but we review all comments received during the scoping process, and they're all considered in the development of the EIS alternatives and also in the scope of the EIS analysis. So we follow the Council on Environmental Quality's NEPA regulations, which require that the EIS consider a reasonable range of alternatives And they define reasonable alternatives as those that are technically and economically feasible, meet the purpose and need for the proposed action, and where applicable, like in this case, meet the goals of the applicant. So that is a process during which NOAA Fisheries makes data requests to ODF as needed to support our understanding of the, you know, the contents and the structure and of the HCP and the decisions that were made in the basis so that we can make informed decisions in our assessment of the alternatives. There's a screening process, like I said, I think that considers those that definition in the CEQ regulations. So that's how that's done. I mean, I can't say specifically how likely something is to be considered, but all those factors go into the screening and decision-making.
All right, so I'm understanding that to mean that there really is only one HCP going forward, but that you will be considering all feedback for possible modification.
We will be analyzing alternatives to the HCP.
Oh, okay.
And typically what's considered is, you know, it can be modifications to the components of the HCP. It could be the permit term, the plant, the permit area, the covered species, and the conservation, the elements of the conservation strategy. So all of those things and all comments on those elements were considered in that evaluation.
Thank you.
Just to follow up real quick, but it seems like a really important piece of the alternatives analysis is that it meets the purpose and need. And so I'm just curious, have we seen or will we not see the final purpose and need statement until the draft EIS is released? Is that correct?
Deb, this is Liz. Deb, would you answer that one as well, please?
Sure. I believe that there was a draft purpose and need statement was included in the notice of intent to prepare the EIS. That is usually considered preliminary. I don't anticipate that it would change because we had already kind of nailed that down in early NEPA planning, but it's possible that it could be,
okay,
you know, different in the public draft slightly.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. We move on to the forest management plan. You had a second question.
Oh, the only question that wasn't answered is there any likelihood that their efforts will just totally take this off the rails?
Rather than putting Deb on the spot again, I just from my perspective outside looking in on the NEPA process, I don't see it as derailing the process. I see it as just like any other information that was submitted to NOAA Fisheries. It's another piece of information for them to consider as they frame up those alternatives.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
And I would just like to add that the proposed action is the Western Oregon HCP, the administrative draft. And that is what's being evaluated, as you mentioned. If you wanted us to do a different proposed action, then that would be forward direction coming to us. And we'd likely have to begin again on the NEPA process. So we are moving forward with the draft that you approved us to move into NEPA.
Okay, why don't we go to the next part of our presentation? And we might be running a little bit later than we had planned, so we might do some speed talking. But I think that was a good discussion. I appreciate all the questions.
Thanks, Liz. Speed talking is sometimes my specialty. So now I'd like to provide you with an update on the forest management plan and implementation plan project. And if adopted, the HCP, of course, would have important effects on the overarching goals and management strategies that would necessitate new FMP. So I'd like to start with a general description of our planning levels along with the contents and approval authorities associated with them. As you're aware, the FMP and HCP are board approved or adopted policy level plans that inform high level management goals and strategies. The FMP specifically is adopted as Oregon administrative rule with a finding by the board that it provides greatest permanent value. It's important to note that while the HCP may provide goals, strategies, commitments, and metrics for HCP covered species specifically, the FMP has a more overarching context and is actually the document that guides the management of state forests and incorporates many other resource goals. Implementation plans are approved by the state forester and provide mid-level tactical objectives for discrete time and spatial scales, such as annual timber harvest objectives over a 10-year period of time or for a specific portion of state forests. In addition to timber harvest objectives, IPs will address all management objectives, including HCP-covered species, habitats for other native wildlife, aquatic restoration projects, and recreation, education, and implementation. Annual operations plans are approved by the district forester and detail the specific activities for the fiscal year that will be used to achieve implementation plan objectives. While the FMP is the overarching policy document, it is influenced by other high-level planning processes and information, both within and outside of ODF. While not comprehensive, this slide points out some notable influences. The HCP strategies have been the focus of much attention, but other notable plans are being developed as well. Our recreation, education, and interpretation team is currently developing the high-level vision that will provide REI goals for the FMP and also result in the strategic recreation and interpretive plans that will be incorporated into implementation plans. The climate change and carbon plan will acknowledge goals and strategies in the FMP that provide resilient forests and sequestration opportunities. The FMP will be responsive to state and federal laws. In some cases, FMP strategies may exceed basic regulatory requirements, but in other instances, they will simply meet them. We will also be responsive to strategic policies from our partner agencies, such as ODFW's Oregon Conservation Strategy, which will help characterize habitat for native wildlife not addressed by the HCP strategies. This will include early and mid-serial forest habitats and site-specific unique habitats such as meadows, bogs, and talus slopes. And of course, the best available science will be used to help find the right balance among all FMP goals. The previous draft FMP effort that was paused in 2020 to focus on HCP development will serve as a springboard for the new project. While it will need substantial redrafting to accommodate HCP strategies and update resource assessments, adaptive management framework, and other items, we are not starting entirely from scratch. An important underpinning is the 11 guiding principles adopted by the board in July of 2018. The guiding principles provide a high-level vision for how ODF state forest management activities will provide GPV. I'll briefly walk through those guiding principles. The first one's greatest permanent value, which is grounded in the management mandates for Board of Forestry lands as expressed in the greatest permanent value and forest management plan OARs, and the mandates for common school forest lands. Contained within this principle is the county's protected and recognizable interest in the revenue generated from this land. Conservation, the lands will be managed, conserved, and restored to provide overall biological diversity of state forest lands, including a variety of habitats for native fish and wildlife and accompanying ecological processes. Financial viability. The plan will provide revenue to ensure financial viability and sustain values that support GPV. Number four is social benefits, providing for a range of social benefits for all Oregonians, including direct and indirect financial contributions to local and state governments, ecosystem services, opportunities for public access and recreational use, support for diverse local employment opportunities, and a process for participating in the forest management planning and implementation process. Number five is forest and watershed restoration. It recognizes that investments in forest and watershed restoration are necessary to achieve desired outcomes that align with GPV policy direction for Board of Forestry and the greatest benefit for the people standard of common school forest lands. Pace and scale. It will be developed and implemented at a scale and pace that provide the appropriate geographic and temporal blend of economic, social, and environmental outcomes. Trade-offs. Plan will provide varying levels of economic, environmental, and social outcomes over time as fiscal conditions change. While this approach will result in short-term trade-offs among specific goals, over the long term, GPV will be achieved. And of course, as mentioned before, it will comply with other state and federal laws and rules. Number nine, stakeholder opportunities. Diverse input from Oregonians and a variety of interested parties will be a high priority throughout the process. Cooperative efforts. We'll achieve goals through cooperative efforts with other agencies and units of local government, user groups, or organizations. And finally, 11, climate change. The plan will be implemented to adapt to climate change and mitigate its impact on management of state forest lands. The plan will also contribute to climate change mitigation and sequester carbon. We will now transition to the working project timelines. The dark blue and light blue sections of the graphic are the timelines for the HCP development and NEPA process, which were covered in the HCP presentation. The orange bar is the working timeline for the forest management plan development, and the green bar at the bottom of the graphic represents the implementation plan's development timeline. The FMP development process has three subphases, which include draft, which has a 10-month duration, refine, with a 6-month duration, and rulemaking and finalization with a 4-month duration. The months highlighted in yellow near the bottom of the timeline are planned Board of Forestry engagements. As discussed earlier in the HCP update, the division plans to present the FMP and HCP to the Board of Forestry for decision in early 2023. In addition to the FMP, the project team will be developing implementation plans on a staggered timeline. Development of the IPs is broken into three phases, which include planning and data preparation with a 6-month duration, a draft with a 12-month duration, and lastly, refine and finalize with a 6-month duration, which will include a public comment period and finalization of the plans. We anticipate the IPs will be presented to the state forester for decision in early to mid 2023. We will now discuss at a high level the plan for and process for engagement, which is a critical component of this planning effort. We are striving for transparency and input from partners, tribes, stakeholders, and the public. For the duration of the project, the division will be working with Kearns and West and Oregon Consensus to develop a strong and meaningful engagement process and plan. Kearns and West conducted focus interviews throughout April and May, which will inform our engagement goals for this project. We held our first informational update open to the public on May 6th, and we are working to confirm additional engagement dates for the months of August and October. The engagement plan under development will include our county partners, but more importantly, we'll maintain our direct engagement through this body to provide you with meaningful information as you advise, as you work through this process. Next steps. To close out, I'd like to cover the next steps for the project team. As mentioned earlier in the presentation, one of the project team's first tasks will be to map out existing strategies within the HCP, state and federal law, and related planning efforts, such as the agency's carbon and climate change plan, to conduct a greatest permanent value analysis. This analysis will inform the development of FMP goals and strategies that support the guiding principles and ultimately provide a plan that achieves GPV. This team is also in the process of developing technical work plan and schedule for forest management plan content and development. In addition, we will be spending time on HCP knowledge equalization to ensure the project team has the needed foundation for this new management approach and the framework as we move our focus to development of the forest management plan and implementation plans. And that concludes our update on the forest management plan and implementation plans development projects. We'd be happy to take any questions on that. Thank you.
Just for clarification, if I'm looking at the timeline correctly, it looks like we get back together to discuss the draft FMP in November. Is that correct? Yeah, okay.
Yes, that's correct.